If you're coming this way, it's, I wrapped your travel head around Atlanta for the last time.
I've met everyone yet, but I'm Emory Roberts, I'm the new Director of Finance and Customer Service. This is my first investment committee meeting, looking forward to it. First on the agenda is the approval of the minutes from the last meeting.
Motion to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
All in favor.
Aye.
We'll go ahead and get right into the reports, the Sawgrass is first. Sawgrass has something to do next.
All right, well, hope everyone is doing well, thanks for having us, as usual. We'll get started.
Let's get my office open.
Have a good today. There we go. Okay, so I think what we have now in the marketplace can be very well, very best described as a battle within US interest rates, and really interest rates are kind of a proxy for the whole market as a whole. And what I mean by that is they're really a push and a pull between the economy and other factors that are affecting the economy and how the Fed's gonna react to interest rates and really how the bond market and the equity market, I should say, as well, how that's reacting in response to a lot of those factors. So I'm really using interest rates as a proxy, more so because we're bond managers and it helps us out, but I do think the bond market is more reflective of how the marketplace is being viewed as a whole. So a couple factors that are pushing rates lower, and they're really factors that we're not used to in the past, a lot of new things that are entering the marketplace. So number one, I put French elections. We had the initial round of the French elections last week. We had the final round coming up on March 7th. So what we had here was an interesting dichotomy. You had a couple different races going on. You had four different main candidates. And you had a what I would describe as a far-right candidate, a far-left candidate, and one of the centrists. And what they do is they vote, and then the final two essentially move on to the final round of voting. The marketplace was somewhat fearful that the what I would describe as the far-right candidate and what she wanted to do was Marine Le Pen was actually exit the EU and a couple different drastic measures that would provide a fair amount of uncertainty in the marketplace. They were somewhat fearful that she would do very well. It was expected that she would move on to the next phase. It was a matter of how well she would do and also who her opponent would be. I mentioned the far-left candidate. There was some fear that it would be the far-left versus the far-right. It was a lot of uncertainty what that would mean for the marketplace. What ended up happening was Macron, who is more of a centrist, more of a general candidate, ended up receiving the most amount of votes, and he would now face off versus Marine Le Pen, who is that more far-right candidate. The marketplace is now pricing in, I think the odds makers have it at about 7-1, that Macron would pull in a majority of the votes when that does happen. However, if you remember back in November, these 7-1 odds do sound very eerily familiar in terms of other companies. So there is still that.
Polls lie.
Yeah, exactly. I think there's definitely a certain mistrust of polls. I think they've been maybe adjusted at this point, but still, that possibility is still there. However, it is the consensus is that Macron, who's more than centrist, would win. So what does that mean? Why does that affect U.S. interest rates? Why does that affect the U.S.? The bottom line is we already had Brexit. There was some uncertainty there. Brexit, in a vacuum, doesn't have that much of an impact on the global economy. It's more of the trickle-down effect. If that happens, what happens after that? And this would be a case of another instance of a very large economy in the EU leaving, and what would that mean for both Europe and the world as a whole? So again, it just provides a fair amount of uncertainty. At this point, the marketplace has somewhat subsided in that fear, but it's only a week away, so that potential is still there. So that initially put some fear that drove some demand in U.S. Treasuries for more of a safe haven. That drove rates down. Once that fear stepped away, rates started to pick up a little bit, but that had an impact. You've got the ECB and the Bank of Japan that are still printing money as the U.S. was, keeping rates very low. Especially in Europe, you have seen inflation and growth pick up a little bit. However, you've seen statements from the ECB say we're not there just yet. We're going to wait. A lot of that, again, is this political uncertainty. I mentioned France. You actually have, if something happens there, you have Italian and German elections coming up. So they're not really being discussed as much right now, but there's always something that's going to be coming up. So I think until that gets sorted out, you're going to have the central banks keeping interest rates very low and how that's going to affect demand in the U.S. You've got geopolitical risks. So on top of the somewhat quantifiable factors, more you call it hard data, jobs, GDP, inflation, etc., we've got some geopolitical risks that you can't necessarily foresee. We had Syria, bombing in Syria. We have Russian relations as a whole. We've got North Korea. So there are things there that have the potential to provide some fireworks, and how is that going to impact the market? Again, if that does happen, you typically see a rush to safe assets, U.S. Treasuries, so you see rates really get pushed down in that case. And you also have, still you have domestic and international buying of U.S. Treasuries, particularly both the central banks internationally and domestically, you have corporations still buying U.S. interest rates because the yields are still pretty low, and they do provide us, even with our portfolio, they give you that somewhat safe amount of yield pickup you can get in those assets. So I'll show later on in some charts and how that's still having an impact. So those factors are essentially keeping rates on the low side. The other side of that is what's going to push rates higher. You have the Fed still hiking. We had them hike again in December. We had them hike again in March. The odds right now of a June hike are about 2/3. So I think they actually have a meeting this month where there'll be probably some rhetoric that comes out, maybe setting the table a little bit for a June rate hike. I don't think you'll see much there, but the marketplace is still pricing in anywhere from 2 to 3 rate hikes. So as that happens, rates will typically pick up, especially on the front end of the Treasury curve. You've had the Fed, some rhetoric come out that they want to shrink their balance sheet. We've got right now about $4.5 trillion in U.S. bonds and U.S. Treasuries and mortgage-backed securities. That can't last forever. They have to do something to get out of that. As of right now, they're just reinvesting the proceeds from those Treasury bonds and mortgage-backed securities. The question is, how do they start to taper off those investments? Do they just stop altogether? Do they just stop reinvesting? Do they start selling bonds? It's very unknown how that's going to happen. You may start to see some initial dialogue coming out of the Fed in terms of how they're going to approach that, but it's certainly going to provide some uncertainty. Once that does start to happen, and that demand comes away, they've provided somewhat of a backstop for rates in those bonds. So that demand comes away. If no one replaces that void, then rates sort of theoretically start to trickle up a little bit. You've got economic growth and inflation. How much growth and inflation we get is somewhat of a question. We've had a steady period of here, slow and steady growth. I mean, we personally believe that's going to continue, but then you've got some of that out there that think we're in for 3 to 4% GDP, but we're still hovering around low twos. We just had a fairly poor first quarter number, but which first quarter is usually a slow period as it is. But there's still some question of how that's going to unfold as people become more confident in growth and inflation. The rates start to come up, especially on the long end. So we saw that, as I'll get into, we saw that initially, and then that's kind of come back a little bit. So the question is, where's that going to end up? And then you've got hopes of fiscal stimulus. I'll get into this as well, but you had post-election, end of last year, into the early year, you had this hope of tax reform, different factors, that infrastructure and healthcare and different factors that could really provide a boost to the economy. That's still there. I think it's just that the hope has somewhat become a little more reserved at this case. We've had some failures in Congress in terms of getting these passed. So there's a little more uncertainty. We're still very early. Things probably still will get passed. It's a matter of what they actually are in the long run. So there's still that hope there, but as that hope ebbs and flows, the rates are affected by that. So as I came in last quarter, I think I put on going into the year, we had 30 quote unquote simple issues that are going to watch in 2017. So what I did was by hand I went in and crudely just highlighted some of the factors we're already looking at now, we're just 3 months later. So it comes out to about half of the 30 have already had some kind of impact and are already being discussed if you look at the news. So I won't get into all of them, but you've got a pretty wide litany of those factors, both domestically, internationally, geopolitical, I mentioned some quantifiable, some non-quantifiable. So this kind of gives you some insight into just how much is going on right now, both domestically and globally, and really what can impact interest rates and the marketplace as a whole. So I imagine, as I mentioned, the German elections, we've got some other issues, new FOMC measures, new Fed chair. So these are things that will come up in the next couple of months, at least for the remainder of the year. So at some point, a majority of these will probably be highlighted. So it's a very complicated marketplace where we stand right now. So looking at the 10-year, just to kind of give you an idea of where rates are and what we're facing, I mentioned back in November we had the election, and you had the, you know, what they kind of deemed the Trump tree, and both equity markets rallied and treasury yields came up. Again, that was on hopes of fiscal stimulus, on hopes of growth, and very pro-economic policies. That really continued up until, you know, essentially the beginning of the year. You then had the Fed raise rates in December, so all of this played into a, you know, a rate-rising environment, a pro-growth environment. As the year went on, you started to see a little bit, I think quite honestly, we had a little bit too much too fast, so there was due for some kind of correction, both in the equity markets and the bond market, so that happened. You know, as it went on earlier in the year. And then I think you started to see some uncertainty in terms of policies being passed. You had, as we went on, things became a little more clear that maybe there was a little bit too much optimism, so the rates came down. But then you had the Fed come in and the Fed raised rates. So again, you've got that push and pull of uncertainty in the long run, but the Fed raising rates, which is gonna, you know, gonna raise rates as a whole. So you had that back in March. Then you had the healthcare failure in about mid or late March. So that, more of the impact on that was, if we couldn't pass healthcare reform, what does that mean for tax reform? What does that mean for other legislative concerns down the road? So that really had an impact on treasury rates. You saw more of a, again, a demand for treasury rates. Equity markets sold off a little bit, not as much, and I'll show that in a second, not as much as you saw in the bond market, but that really provided some uncertainty of that's gonna happen. So, again, we may have the Fed raise rates again in June, and then again in December. So you really got a dichotomy between what the Fed is doing and then what the overall economy is doing, or what the hope is for the economy. I think you really see that. We don't have to list it here, but if you look at the Treasury curve, you really see that. You've seen the short end rates come up, which is more dictated by the Fed, and then on the tens and the 30-year, which is more dictated by overall long-term growth and inflation, that has come down compared to the short, to the front end. So that kind of really sums up the market view right now. I mentioned what I did here was just put the 10-year along with the equity markets. And for the most part, they're pretty correlated. You see here at year end, the equity markets are going up and treasury yields are going up, even probably a little bit more so. You see a little bit of bounce, you know, in the 10-year. But the equity markets are pretty much, they've been pretty resilient. There's definitely a little bit more bullish. You typically do see that. I think there's other factors that are involved in that. We've had strong earnings. Yields are still relatively low. So I think just as a place to get any kind of return, you're seeing money put into the equity markets. But you see here, even in the latest downturn in yields, equity markets, for the most part, have stayed pretty consistent. And we see even last week, we had good earnings. So that pushed the equity markets up. So they've been pretty positive. A little bit of a different viewpoint there, I think, between those two marketplaces. I mentioned inflation and just how much of an impact that has on rates. We put here just some factors that are going to really play that role, and I won't go into all of them, but I mentioned the Fed raising rates 3 times tells us that they're somewhat worried about the economy overheating. So even as you see people that are worried about the economy going into somewhat of a tailspin, you have the Fed saying, no, we're going to raise rates, which typically means we don't want to go too far too fast. So a different viewpoint there. In terms of jobs, is the economy already at full employment? You look at where wages are and where the unemployment rate is, typically that leads into higher inflation where they are right now. Wages are going up. The jobs are somewhat tailing off. We saw somewhat of a poor job number last month. It's 1 month. We don't read too much into it. But you see the growth in jobs are starting to tail off. Wages are picking up. Typically, that historically has meant higher inflation. So you would expect that to pick up average hourly earnings. One of the important things is the strong dollar we've had. You've had President Trump come out and say he believes that the dollar is too strong. Since that statement, it has, of course, come down. But there is a question to how that's going to impact U.S. exports with prices going up overall. So that, of course, has an impact on inflation as well. Import prices going higher, producer prices going higher. Break-even inflation, if you look at TIPS prices, which are Treasury inflation-protected securities, as you see the break-even price or break-even point go up, that typically means the marketplace is pricing in higher inflation. We've seen that as well. And then I mentioned some fiscal stimulus, lower corporate taxes, increased infrastructure. All of these are somewhat tied to what Congress can do going forward. So if you do see that, we had a tax outline, I would call it, come out last week. There's been some uncertainty as far as that getting passed in those particular terms. But even if they're revised, any kind of tax reform should theoretically be a boost to the economy and to corporate's bottom line. So with that, you'd see some growth in inflation as well. Just to put it in somewhat chart form and a visual form, you see the U.S. dollar. Again, a lot of this is, you know, post-election, you see the initial boost, and then you see it start to trickle down a little bit. I mentioned the president coming out and mentioning and saying that the U.S. dollar was particularly strong, maybe too strong since that point. I think it was right around here. You've seen that come down a little bit. So that'll have an impact as well. And a lot of that's also impacted by what we see in Europe and the currency situation over there with the French elections and the various elections going on. Brexit is still a forthcoming development and what that's going to mean. I mentioned just again, put it kind of more visually, but in wages, you've seen wages trickle up slowly, but they're getting there. And again, as jobs continue to grow, you would expect that to continue. It's a matter of how hard and how fast that continues to move up. But certainly a positive trend there in terms of wages. Here's just inflation. The Fed typically looks at core PCE, which is going to strip out energy. And then you see here blue, they're aiming for about 2%. Right now we're at about 1.7. So there still is some ways to go. A lot of what they're doing is just predicting that the trend's going to continue. But a lot of, you could definitely argue, if inflation's not at their 2% level and still pretty low, should they be raising interest rates where we stand right now? There certainly is a pretty strong argument here for a lot of people in terms of, don't lay off the gas pedal just yet. We haven't actually hit what we consider, strong growth in inflation at this point. I mentioned the unemployment rate. I mean, we're back to essentially 07, 08 levels where we stand right now, from where we've come from. So that continues, even though we didn't have particularly strong jobs numbers, the unemployment rate trickled down, which means there's people entering the marketplace, which we don't typically see, haven't seen recently. That participation rate is really a strong number of how many people are not sitting on the sidelines, how many people are actually getting involved looking for jobs. So definitely some positive growth numbers there. Just to go a little bit under the hood, you look at, this is an interesting stat, how many people are voluntarily quitting jobs? Essentially meaning you're going to voluntarily quit to get what you would deem a higher paying, better job. So that rate is actually tricking up, and it's been the highest you've seen since 07. So there's definitely some controversy of what does the unemployment rate mean. If you look under the hood, there's a lot more to it. But I think this is a pretty positive number in terms of confidence in the marketplace. And again, back to wages, if people are quitting their jobs voluntarily for what you would essentially consider a higher paying job, that's a good sign for wages and overall confidence in the job market. I mentioned some of the corporate supply and the new issuance and what companies are doing. We actually we hit a high last year in 2016. We're breaking records again in 2017. That's again, low interest rates. Usually, typically, what that means is companies want to get in as rates are still low. If they see rates going up, so you've seen that again. What does this mean for us? Typically, new issuance means it's a negative in terms of more supply means less demand, and then prices could go down. And on corporate bonds, you haven't really seen that very much. As you see new issues come out, historically you see a bit of a concession in their rates, meaning that you can get about 10 to 15 basis points on average, depending on the issuer and the maturity. But between what the new issue bond may be versus what's trading on the secondary market right now, the demand is so high right now on that new issuance that essentially has disappeared. We're amazed by, companies typically come out with an initial price talk of what they're going to price their bonds at. We're amazed by how tight that level comes in by the time it actually launches. So there hasn't really been much of a new issue supply impact on overall spreads, which is positive for us because we're overweight credit, but it does take away some opportunities there to invest in some of these new issues at pretty attractive yields as well. A lot of it we see right now, and this is saying that it's just a lot of acquisition related new issue. It's a lot of M&A activity, which is typically not very creditor friendly. So a lot of what we're doing right now is really we have models we run through and say who's prone here to be bought, and they're going to add debt to the company is typically negative for a bondholder. So we've been very proactive in looking at our names, looking in the marketplace and saying, okay, what sectors here are very susceptible, what issuers here are very susceptible, and trying to avoid those, to avoid that negative impact. But a lot of M&A is still out there in certain industries. I mentioned just both companies and international, federal, some of the central banks that are buying assets, and we still see that. Here's just the Bank of England, ECB, BOJ, Bank of Japan, and the Fed, and what they're doing for asset purchases. So you see, particularly here, the ECB is buying a lot of U.S. corporate bonds, and they're global corporate bonds. They're under, as the U.S. was with quantitative easing, we were buying different, you know, various corporate bonds and U.S. bonds, treasury bonds. The ECB is buying a lot of corporate bonds right now. So that's really provided a backstop for corporate spreads in the U.S. And you see that continues. And really, it's not, the Fed is out of that game right now, but the ECB and the Bank of Japan have really somewhat picked it up. So it's very interesting that, you know, the global demand on U.S. corporate bonds and what that's happening right now. They provided the backstop, but eventually that'll go away, just like the U.S. did. Although Japan's been doing this for 20 years now with their quantitative easing, but so you can't rely on them. But the ECB, you would expect, you know, I look at them as they're kind of the U.S. right now, but maybe 5 years or a couple years after. So if you get growth and inflation there, you would expect that to somewhat come down. But as of right now, there's definitely a lot of demand that's there. This is the change in corporate bond holdings by investor type in 2016. So I think it's interesting to see these are non-U.S. investors. So a lot of the mentioned the central banks, different companies, some retail mixed in as well. But you've got a huge change in how much they, in 2016, of how much they're impacting the market and how much demand they're providing to it. We always kind of put this up because it's interesting, I think, but yeah, I mentioned the Fed raising two or three times for the remainder of the year, but this is just going forward. This is the Fed dot plot of all the different Fed governors and where they see the target rate going forward. So you see, I mean, there's definitely some dispersion there between how much, you know, how focused they are and how dovish they are, but you still see the overall trend going up. And as usual, the market is somewhat, these are futures based on where the traders and where the bond market as a whole is pricing in the Fed rates going forward and interest rates as a whole. So clearly there's a difference of opinion there, which has been the case now for a couple of years, and the marketplace has been right for, you know, really the last 5-6 years. However, now the Fed, because the Fed just never raised rates, now the Fed is actually raising rates, and they've shown that, you know, a couple of times. And we expect them to do it going forward. So there's still that gap here where if the marketplace gets it wrong, there's still a lot of space here for them to lose money if they're wrong on that side of the trade. So as a firm, you know, we've been short duration, so we've been more in agreement with the Fed because we don't want to miss out on this, and that's negative return potentially right there. We don't want to have that come through your return. And I think that sums up the overall market view. Any questions?
Great report, David. Appreciate it.
I'll get into our portfolio.
Looks like this is going to last for a long time. Mm-hmm. But you see a 2% spread between the German bund and the U.S. Treasury. What are you guys looking for to see that maybe that's going to shift? Is there anything that you look specifically for?
Well, I mean, we're always looking at that. I mean, yeah, German Bund is one example that we're always kind of keeping an eye on, because that's somewhat of a proxy for just European interest rates. And, mm-hmm. and they're positive now, but they were negative, and they're positive. They're barely positive.
It's
German Bund, so they were better than negative, mm-hmm. I guess. But it was a certain time. It wasn't just Germany, but there was negative interest rates across, and people were actually buying negative mm-hmm. yielding, which is hard to fathom. But there was such a lack of confidence in other asset classes that people were essentially willing to lose money on an investment, because losing very little is better than losing a lot. So yeah, we're always keeping an eye on that, and what does that mean? That's just like the U.S., that's an indication of where's the European growth.
So I don't know what to look for to see when of them, will it ever catch up? I mean, will it ever,
right.
They'll be on par or whatever, I don't know.
At some point, we hope so. I mean, there's a lot of uncertainty, and you know, I mentioned there has been signs of growth in Europe. There have been signs of inflation. The question is whether that's real. What does that mean if we have, again, like various elections coming up? So there, you know, there's areas, even in France, it's not, you know, they're okay. They're you know, exhibiting, as you see across the world, slow, steady growth. It's not, you know, it's not great, but it's okay. It's consistent. The question is, does that pick up?
Yeah, I just don't know how you manage your portfolio and what you're looking for to either short or length a little bit more one way or the other.
Well, we view that as a demand aspect, and so yeah, if you're gonna have negative interest rates or low interest rates, yeah, that's gonna have an impact on U.S. rates. Yeah. It's gonna certainly keep them down somewhat. It's a factor. It's not like, you know, it's not the main driving factor, but yeah, we certainly look at global rates, and again, that goes back to also the corporate spread. You know, we're overweight credit for a lot of factors, but one of them being that a lot of these central banks and European investors are looking at their own bonds and saying, there's negative rates, you know, corporate spreads aren't really attractive as well. Where can we find any kind of yield, which is ironic because our yields are pretty low, but relatively speaking, they're pretty attractive. So that is a positive for corporate spreads and provides somewhat of a backstop. So it affects both, but yeah, we're always, you know, it's something we're always keeping an eye on.
Yeah, I don't know whether they had a magic formula or something like that or whatever that you wanted to say.
I wish, no. it's a trade secret. I wish we, and honestly, and we have an opinion, you know, we can, especially, so our Sawgrass manages the portfolio for you guys. It's a short portfolio. Mm-hmm. So there's definitely more certainty in the short end of the treasury curve. Because again, that's impacted by the Fed, mm-hmm. more so than the long end of the curve is. So what we've done is we've gone, this doesn't get so much affect your portfolio because you're short, but in our more longer portfolios, what we've done is we've made a call on the front end of the curve because we think rates are going to come up. The long end of the curve, we've essentially got neutral because we don't know. Mm-hmm. And it's, no one can say they know because again, I just mentioned all the factors that could impact the long end of the curve, which is it's more reflective of long-term growth. You know, will tax reform get passed? Will infrastructure spending get passed? And so forth. And, you know, no one knows. So I think we've made the call to say, you know, that we're going to stay neutral there. Mm-hmm. I don't know how rates are going to go. We're going to be more short duration on the front end because we're more certain that the Fed will raise rates, if not three times, you know, maybe once or twice, but they're going to be a pretty consistent path. And that's what happened. You've seen that the front end of the curve has come up and the long end of the curve has come down, and I think that'll continue, or at least that, you know, that long end of the curve may be in somewhat of a band, but probably won't break out unless we see, you know, some very soon news of some fiscal stimulus and some other factors that could come into play. So that's how we've, you know, somewhat structured the portfolio. In terms of the first quarter, I won't get too much into this, but somewhat of a summary page. I mentioned a lot of the things that have happened, the Fed raising rates and some of the uncertainty around fiscal stimulus. I mentioned the Treasury curve, so the 2-year was up about 7 basis points, the 5-year was down 1 basis point, the 10-year was down 6 basis points, and the long bond was down 6 basis points. So these are really small numbers in the grand scheme, but it does give you some color in terms of how the market is looking at things, with front end rates coming up and the long bond coming down a little bit. That's somewhat continued as well. Credit spreads outperformed by 9 basis points. That was a positive for us. And I'll move on to the next page, looking at performance. So we were down 2 basis points to the benchmark. It was a pretty quiet quarter. It wasn't a quiet quarter as the quarter went on, but in the end, the absolute return was fairly benign, but so essentially flat with the benchmark. Over a 1-year basis, we outperformed by about 70 basis points, and a 5-year outperforming as well. For the quarter, I mentioned the credit spreads outperformed for some of the factors I mentioned. What also outperformed were some of the higher beta credits. Typically, if there's some kind of market rally, at least recently, you've seen that happen more in the triple Bs and the lower end credits, which we are not as heavily invested in. We're more high quality. We're going to be underweight triple Bs, so we'll lose some on a relative basis if that happens, but we're okay with that. A lot of what you saw was a lot of the energy names came back in a lot of cases after what we saw last year. These are names we typically don't get involved in. There's too much risk there in our minds. Not to say we completely avoid them, there's good value there, but you kind of saw a lot of high beta, high risk energy names that are very tied to oil. Bounce back in the first quarter. So again, we're underweight that, we're okay with that. And I just looked at some of the long-term performance as well. As far as a portfolio positioning, we are short duration. We have been for some time. We expect it to continue going forward. We're always keeping an eye on it, especially with your portfolio being that you're on the front end of the curve. We definitely think there's more certainty there. We're looking at what the Fed believes in. Even with all these uncertainties, the Fed still seems very optimistic in terms of growth, in terms of inflation. So we expect them to raise rates again. That should have an impact on the front end of the curve, and rates should move up, you know, with short duration. You're looking at a potential negative return, and we look at it as our job to protect your principal as much as possible. So we want to really preserve that capital in case in that type of environment. So I mentioned here we're overweight credit. We have shifted out. We've been a lot more active, I think, in shifting out of some of the names I mentioned that were some M&A potential. We've had a couple just situations where that name has been mentioned in potential acquisitions, and we say, don't wait for it to happen. If we have any inkling at all, we're going to pretend. Usually, we're just going to get out first, ask questions later. We always get back in. We did have a couple names where that did happen, and we were able to get out before the news really hit the tape. And really avoid any kind of spread movement. But overall, we're still overweight credit. We still believe in the high quality, more risk-averse type names that give you additional yield with theoretically not taking on that additional amount of risk by getting into the lower triple Bs. That, you know, if there is any kind of correction, that'll be a lot, that would be affected a lot more. And then really that's, you know, I mentioned some of the higher quality, but in terms of compliance, we're fully in compliance, where we stand right now. And in particular, we show this on a quarterly basis, but just looking at our scenario analysis, and you probably haven't seen this, but not to over, throw out too many numbers for you, but essentially what this is doing is it's giving different scenarios within interest rates and credit spreads and how the portfolio would react. So this is both, this is our composite, but our short fixed income composite versus the Merrill Lynch Gov Credit 1-5 index and how we would perform versus the benchmark. So this is saying if there's no change at all, how would you perform? We're going to underperform because we're lower yielding as we stand right now, which we're fine with for short duration. If rates go up 50 basis points, which is certainly a possibility being that the Fed's going to, you know, we expect to raise rates over a one-year basis, we outperform by 25 basis points. If rates go up 100, we outperform by about 70 basis points. So again, that's what we're preparing for. In that type of environment, we're going to, whereas the benchmark would provide a negative return, we would be positive and outperform on a relative basis as well. And these are just different factors. If credits were taking the treasury curve and steepening it, and then tightening credit spreads and so forth. So there's a lot of information here, but this is the stuff we look at in terms of we're constantly running this to say, we believe our portfolio is positioned in a certain way. First of all, let's make sure that we're correct in that assumption, and let's make sure that these models tell us that. But then also, we want to structure it based on what we believe is going to happen in the marketplace. So we're positioned if rates go up and credit spreads tighten, which we expect, that's we're going to outperform in that type of environment. And that's these are just your holdings. So feel free to take a look if you have any questions on any particular names. That wraps it up. If there's any questions?
No questions?
No.
No. Very good.
Motion to accept the
Cyrus
report.
Okay.
Aye.
PFM.
All right. Well, good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Pleasure to be here this morning on a Monday morning. I think what I'll do, given the presentation we just had, I don't want to spend a whole lot of time repeating some of the market stuff. I'll come back to that. Let's go right to the portfolio and performance and kind of take a look at the numbers, and then I'll work backwards to where I think some of the market information is going to be has affected this portfolio and what we think about going forward. So let me just approach it a little bit different just to keep this data interesting for all of us. The performance, I'm on page 13 if you have your hand up here. The performance for the portfolio, for those that you know that this is the shortest one of the three portfolios. So our job is sort of your first line defense outside of your bank accounts and your money market funds and LGIPs and so on and so forth. The duration for the quarter ended up right on top, or a little bit ahead of the benchmark durations. You see the duration was a 183 versus 181. If you recall, we had stayed a little bit shorter over the last year or so, just sort of anticipating what the Fed would be doing. Of course, now we've had three Fed increases, 2015, 2016, and then, of course, in 2017. And we've been talking about that duration to help minimize the negative returns that we've had, as we talked about. This particular quarter, I think, was probably one of the few Fed increases that you could really say to yourself, the Fed's actually going to do it. It was very transparent. The market was actually right for the one of the first few times in a long time. Called and said the Fed was going to raise rates, and guess what? They actually did it. Generally, you know, the market's somewhat right, somewhat wrong, and everybody kind of has a different opinion. So our strategy this quarter to really try to bring in a good return for you was to buy into rising interest rates. So you'll see in the details section of this quarter performance report all the buys and sells, all the activity took place. So we came in at a quarter at 42 basis points against the benchmark of 26. So we're up about 16, and then we're up about 49 basis points for the year. And then, of course, you can see throughout the since inception, we're about 40 basis points ahead of the benchmark. So this quarter was really about anticipating the Fed increase. And as, of course, the closer you get to the Fed actual meeting, rates already start pricing it in. So we took activity in that regard. So you'll start to see within the beginning of the quarter, we started to position ourselves for the rate increase and started to buy into it. And you'll know that we still favor corporates, which were a pretty good portion of the portfolio, as well as asset backs. See if I can go back here. So the general overall portfolio is listed here. Various statistics, the par value is about $50 million. Total market value for the securities was about $50.6 million. And the credit quality is, of course, a AA on S&P, so very high credit quality, all the way from AA+, which represents about 53% of the portfolio, all the way to the BBB, which is about 1%. So a very high credit quality. It's a good first-line defense portfolio, lots of liquidity. If for some reason the finance department was hit with an unanticipated need from the budget department, you have the ability to get into this portfolio. So that's one of, I think, our most important mandates is the liquidity. Of course, safety first, obviously, that's always the first concern. Then the liquidity to make sure that the finance department has a resource to get to. And you can see the rest of the portfolio is laid out about almost 37% in corporates, followed by asset-backed. Both of these sectors performed really well in this past quarter, and have been doing relatively well for the last year or two. And if you go back in history, you see we've been utilizing both of these sectors, which perform quite well for us. Maturity distribution has been an important aspect of the over return, really since December of 2015, when the Fed finally started to raise interest rates. So we've been very careful about maturity distribution, again, to make sure we have that liquidity mandate for you. So you see about 81.1% left in the short area. Obviously, the sweeter the yield curve for our area, this portfolio is really in the 1 to 2 year area, bleeding a little bit into the 2 year area. Really brings the best return. If you look at the yield curve, which we'll come back to here in a minute, that's a good place to be for the positioning of this portfolio. And of course, we've got other parts of the portfolio really laid out here. From 3 to 5, of course, the mortgage backs, about 5.2% represent in the 5+ area. And looking at the sector allocation, like I said, about 37% is in corporates, followed by 23% in federal agencies, and then 18 and 13% respectively for U.S. Treasuries and asset backs. In looking at the sector allocation against the benchmark, of course, the benchmark is the 1 to 3 year U.S. Treasury. This is one of my favorite charts because it does show you, and maybe this is for the first time for Emily to see this, but this chart lays out historically from June of last year to March of this year. You can see how the asset allocation stacks up and really how it's been changing. If you look at the federal agencies, which has been kind of an interesting story, you know, over the last couple of years, we've talked to you on many occasions with the decline of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac issuance due to the U.S. Treasury mandate to reduce their issuance by 50% per year. we really kind of thought that 2017, 2018 would have less agencies, more treasuries because of the reduction in availability. There's about $1 trillion worth of bonds not in the marketplace in that sector because of the decline. But really because of the way spreads have widened a little bit, it's made more sense to kind of bring back some agencies. So you'll see the allocation spread increase to that a little bit more over time. Still utilizing corporates and asset backs to kind of give us the corporate punch to this portfolio. But I suspect we've got a couple things that we need to kind of think in the background that's happening. Specifically for the shorter end of the yield curve, we had the Money Market Reform Act in full effect on October 14th of last year. There's about $1 trillion worth of bonds that have really, or I should say dollars that have left the prime money market funds, really kind of coming out of the commercial paper, corporate aspects of prime money market funds going into government funds. So we have those additional dollars chasing really short-term securities, and that's been helping to keep yields down a little bit. So even though the Fed is trying to raise rates, the shift in demand for high government bonds has kind of helped muted the Fed increase. So that's been kind of an interesting phenomenon that's been occurring. And of course, the Fannie Mae Freddie Mac situation. So that there's been some nuances that we've never faced before on the short end of the yield curve because of the shift in regulation. It'll be interesting to see. We see a little bit of hints, and this is mostly happening in the corporate sector, where they want to go back to the prime money market funds. The public sector has kind of sort of digested this all and have really kind of stayed away from prime money market funds because of the fluctuating net asset value. But we're starting to see corporations rethink that a little bit, because if you think of the rate differential, it's almost like if you do a cost-benefit analysis, the return on a prime money market fund is pretty much more attractive than a government fund, and that differential you give up on the fluctuating net asset value doesn't scare them as much as it originally did in the last 2 years when this regulation was taking place. So we'll have to see if those dollars come back, and that, of course, will put pressure on prime securities, you know, commercial paper, bankers' acceptances. We'll see how that comes back. I think that'll be more of a 2018 situation, maybe late 2017, when corporations are a little hungry for returns. And now that interest rates have moved up, that spotlight on low yields is not quite as dramatic as it used to be. So rates are a little bit more attractive now that we have kind of a yield curve. There's a heartbeat on the short end. We'll have to see how that plays out. But really going forward, we'll continue to still favor corporates and asset backs, I think, through much of 2017. Again, from a duration standpoint, this is going to be, I think, really for all of us across the board here, duration is going to play a little bit more of a stronger story than sector allocation. With rising interest rates, we'll have to be all kind of thinking about what the Fed is doing. The discussion that David had in the beginning here was very relevant to all of us, I think. If the Fed's raising 2 or 3 times this year, that'll all impact us. And I think all of the managers want to avoid a negative return. But overall, negative returns are okay because of the fact that you have lots of cash on the front end. You know that you don't have to dip into these portfolios for cash purposes. Over time, obviously higher rates will be better for you. It's a little ugly in the front end when rates are rising and we have market volatility, but at the end of the day, we do need higher interest rates. They've been relatively too low for too long, and this will bring better interest income back to your budget, and that'll be a good thing. But just on a quarter-to-quarter basis, you know, all of us will probably come in with some negative returns, and we're all going to get concerned about it. But as we have good cash flow information and we have good expenditure knowledge, then we're able to withstand the rise of interest rates. Probably a good thing to realize now is that this is why individually held portfolios is better than being in a bond mutual fund, especially in rising interest rates. Because in a bond mutual fund, you're dependent on a share price, and you can't hold anything to maturity because you don't own anything. in a separately managed portfolio in a rising interest rate environment, you're better suited for that, because if rates do rise and you have market value decline, you at least have the ability to hold those bonds to maturity and take out the full par, as opposed to waiting for that share price to come back and sell it either at a neutral or a slight loss. So that's really kind of puts you in a driver's seat, at least from that standpoint, going forward. Again, credit quality is really solid in this portfolio. This chart ranks from the highest to lowest. Always keep in mind that the credit quality from presentation standpoint is an S&P, so it's going to be the AA+ as opposed to Moody's or Fitch, would be a AAA. But you can see the dispersion here all the way across the board. Our top five holdings, of course, is agencies, treasuries, Fannie Mae, Fannie Mac, and CarMax, Citigroup, Bank of Nova Scotia, and then followed out by Exxon and IBM and Chevron to make the top 10 or so. In the transactions that I want to point out, as you're going to see, that a lot of the purchases that took place through the quarter, this starts in the beginning of January and goes all the way through the end of the quarter, these purchases really took place in response to us getting ready for a rate increase. Most of it going to be in corporates and asset-backed, really to find the kind of the best returns for the portfolio. You'll notice the sales that took place are back here. They're going to be in the treasuries and agencies a little bit on the 2018-2019 time frame, repositioning the portfolio to really kind of capture those higher returns in this. That was helped us really kind of perform better against the benchmark. And then the last page, and I'll go back to the market update, but as far as the compliance page, all the asset allocation rules are in compliance, and you should hopefully receive this on a monthly basis to this report. Let me know if you're not on the email distribution, but we like to keep you informed on a regular basis. So all the requirements of the investment policy. And then, of course, the corporate holdings, you'll see, all holdings here, and everything is great diversification in the portfolio and in compliance with the investment policy. From the next quarter, we're probably going to stay most likely close to that duration of the benchmark. We think the next Fed meeting will probably not have a Fed increase. More likely, the latter part of 2017 will potentially be those two Fed increases that I think we're all kind of thinking about. So we think we'll probably get a pass on the upcoming meeting. And then, how do I get to the other presentation?
It is another
thing. It's not
all together. Oh, they're all together?
No, it's not. They're not.
So I need to escape out of here?
Yes. Let me help you out.
Help me out.
Yeah.
Yeah, right here.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well,
and then, no, you're awesome. Thank
you.
Thank you. Okay, just a couple highlights from our monthly market update. Again, you should be receiving this as well by email. Let me know if you're not. But just a couple things. I don't want to cross over too much to our first presentation. But from an S&P index, it's been really interesting what's been going on. A very strong performance from the S&P 500. For my equity clients, they've been really enjoying the success of equities. The question is, are we in a bubble? And that's always a question here.
What's good question.
It's a good question.
Pension meetings are fun because it's
exactly. Yeah, pension meetings are finally fun again. Right, exactly.
For a while, they were.
And I think going back to our German bond discussion, you know, we've been underweighted on internationals for about a year or so just because of the BRICS exit and stuff and concern about that. And because of where interest rates are going, in especially in Germany, we're coming a little bit more interested in coming a little bit back in buying international equities again, sort of buying them on the cheap, but also the expectation there's improvement there, and we think that that increase in interest rates in that perspective is a sign that the economy is getting better there. And keep in mind that when we were going through the painful Great Recession and our Federal Reserve was doing the quantitative easing, doing the twist, doing one, two, and three quantitative easing, the UE market was not doing any of that. They started way later. In retrospect, Ben Bernanke did a pretty good job getting us out of that horrible situation. The Europeans are just kind of last year or so started that process. And you're starting to see some improvement there. Of course, we got some serious elections occurring there that we talked about earlier. Of course, we saw what happened in the BRICS exit, and we may see some of that again in other parts of Europe. But we're starting to feel a little bit more comfortable with the international equity, but certainly have been overweight in domestics here for the last couple of years. Just from an overall Treasury yield curve perspective, we, of course, we're dealing with higher interest rates across the board. You can see March of 2016 and then, of course, March of 2017, a dark blue line. Across the board, we've had higher interest rates. The curve is just starting to kind of level out a little bit as we see the short end finally being pushed up by the Feds. But I think still a bit muted from what's happening with the Money Market Reform Act. And I still think there's a little bit of a mutation going on there. It's not like the normal one-to-one Fed increase rates. So we got some nuances there. But still, rates are moving up and moving up across the board. This kind of tells you, just from a graphical standpoint, where those rate increases are have been in the last year or so. GDP has been a sad number. This last report was very sad, 0.7 or so. You know, as I said before to you, that we need at least 3.5 year over year to really have a robust economy. The economic research shows that we need at least that number to really start producing enough tax dollars, if you will, that we can start paying off the national debt and really start having a robust economy. The last GDP number was a sad number. I don't think it's indicative for the rest of the year. I think we will have a higher GDP numbers going forward. But you know, obviously that's not a good first quarter to start off with. Here's just the components of GDP, just from a technical standpoint, what makes up GDP from quarter to quarter. We talked a little bit already about the unemployment rate. As we look at the U6 number, which is something we've been talking about here quarter to quarter, that number continues to get better, which is the number that contains the unemployed as well as those that are underemployed, which I think is really the best measurement of the economy and how things are moving. It's getting better. We've come a long way since 2008, 2009 or so. So that's feeling better, which is, you know, I think that's one of the supporting numbers for the Fed, as well as what we see here in the expectation of inflation. I think one of the most important numbers is the PCE number. That number is moving up quite well, and that's really keeping the Fed on the alert to do Fed increases here over this year as we start to get over that magical number that Ben Bernanke kind of wrote down, the 2% number. Anything really over 2%, the Fed should be raising interest rates. And I think as low as rates are, they've got plenty of room to raise rates.
He's writing books now.
And he's writing books now.
He's been out 3 years. And he's writing books. He just started to do Afterward, and the last book he just released. And
he's happy.
Now.
Just by chance, I happen to be listening to NPR this morning. Have anybody else listened to NPR?
Yeah, they had an interview with him.
And he was on. I never heard him so calm.
Yeah, it was like
he's so normal.
And
he's like, oh, this is good. I'm writing books. He just said the next same thing. I thought, that's Ben Bernanke. Is that a type?
Very
relieved. Doesn't have to make that call anymore. He had, I think, you know, most difficult time. I mean, that's whatever he was paid, he deserved every penny. That's one of the hardest jobs in the world. But I think if you look at some of these numbers here on the economic backdrop, I think this still supports why the Fed is going to be in the higher interest rates moving. Consumer confidence highest since 2000, which is, of course, I never get that phone call about my confidence in that survey.
Yeah,
I've never found a person yet that gotten that phone call, but folks are feeling better. And then if you look at the manufacturing purchasing number, that number is moving up. Of course, this is a big Political discussion for Trump administration is really concentrating on manufacturing. We'll have to see how that number plays out for the rest of the year. And we talked about the personal consumption expenditure is moving in a very straight line up high since 2012. Auto sales, as you can see, has dropped. I think auto sales is kind of a two-tailed story here. If you look at the average car, it's been about 10 years, 11 years on the market. A lot of car sales have taken place over the last couple of years, so that's expected to drop back down again. You can't have robust car sales year over year. It's not sustainable. But we'll see how that plays out. We know what happened on March 15th. We had the increase. I think also keep in mind here, the Fed is in this range mode. We don't have a single Fed funds target rate like we used to. It is a range now. I suspect they're going to continue doing this range going forward. It's also something new. We're used to having an actual rate be published or come out as opposed to a range. So we're in this range of 75 to 1%. I also have the dot plot here. It's the famous dot plot of where the board members are. And as we talked about earlier, I think we all can agree that the Fed members are thinking of higher interest rates. When you look at the Fed economic projections across the board, not a whole lot of movement in numbers, not a lot of exciting numbers as far as increases, kind of more steady as we go here across the board, but it is in the range of where the Fed would want to have the numbers to pull the trigger on Fed increases, but not overall, I would call, major movements in the overall Fed economic projections. The balance sheet, I think, will be a big discussion. I think this is another nuance that we have never experienced before. We never had a Fed Reserve balance sheet at this level in total dollars. We're looking at $4.5 trillion that they have, and then what they're going to do with it. And this will affect the marketplace on how these dollars come back into the marketplace, how quickly, and what's the appetite for the investors to come back and buy these bonds. So this is going to be an interesting nuance in the marketplace that is very difficult to put a model to this, very difficult to see what it's going to affect on inflation and pricing.
I wonder, how do you peel that off?
Yeah, how do you peel that off? Yeah, and I'm sure the Fed struggled with that.
Collapse.
Right.
Where does that paper go?
Again, and this is what I kind of want to point out to the committee. So there are things that are out there that we've never faced before.
Right.
What's the effect? What's really the effect of the money market reform? What is the industry going to do with that?
Right. We've never had
that.
This
situation, this balance sheet is all new, and the Fed is struggling with this because this could potentially be a bubble that bursts into the marketplace. And when we're trying to grow the market, we're trying to grow GDP, we're trying to move, we as the Federal Reserve, we're trying to increase interest rates at a relatively slow pace and also very transparent. The Fed's never been this transparent before. And all that is measurable, but then you throw these things in there and it changes the situation.
Okay. The simple answer is a lot of it mature.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Yes. You just sit back and just rest.
Let it mature. Yeah.
Right. But in the interim, do you continue to reinvest? Because then you just keep pushing out maturity. Right. So, there's just nuances, and then...
I say simple better.
There's
a lot of front-end treasuries that they can make
more
mature.
Not to make this a political discussion, but I just throw this out here for you, that there are a lot of proposed policies that are going to be affecting, and we kind of have some discussions here of what are the potential impact. Everything from regulatory, fiscal, trade, immigration, monetary, at some point will have an effect on our portfolios going forward because it's all going to have an effect on interest rates and inflation. So there's lots of things to consider. And we're trying to keep an eye on all this as we see how I think 2017 is a very big transitional year for the new administration. Yield environment as of March 31st, obviously, you know, corporates are bringing a great return overall, especially the further they get out on the yield curve. Double-A corporates, single-A corporates, 153 versus one-year agencies and treasuries. As you can see, they're huddling right on top of each other. So still some advantage to corporates. And we'll have to see what the issuance amount this year. You know, the issuance amount for the last couple of years hasn't been that great. If the economic situation is a little more stable and there's a little more favoritism to business and industry, does it mean that corporations come off the sidelines and do expansions, and the expansions require the issuance of corporate bonds? More corporate bonds will increase yield for us, decrease prices, and that'll be a better situation for you as investors. So we've got a lot of interesting things facing us. Oh, and here's my discussion about the Money Market Reform Act. This was the effect of it. You can see how, you know, almost $900 billion of prime money market funds dropped, and we went into government funds. Of course, those government funds needed more treasuries, more agencies, and that, of course, pushes yields down, pushes prices up. And that creates then advantage here for, and this CD really means negotiable CDs, and of course, commercial paper. So that pops that up, and that gives the advantage to local government investment pools, because they can buy commercial paper and not worry about a fluctuating net asset value. So that's an advantage to your short end. So that's a positive effect to you as a government investor. For corporations, they're kind of over here right now and getting a lower rate of return. Just from a fixed income return, just so you can sort of see across the board, I think it kind of captures your area as well. You can see what the total returns are by sector. Everything for this last 3 months, ending March 31st, did come out positive numbers. In complete contrast to where we were on December 31st, where we had pretty much negatives all the way across the board because the Fed did their rate increase on December 16th, I think, of 2016. So a complete turnaround this particular quarter. My last chart here is our heat map. Obviously, this is sort of putting aside credit quality considerations, but looking at return and what we favor. Of course, commercial paper. A little bit less on corporates this past quarter, and you would see that in our asset allocation. We dropped a little bit on corporate holdings, but we still feel pretty good about that, but just a little bit less than we were in previous quarters. And if we had looked at this last quarter, we were feeling a little bit better about asset backs, but a little bit less this particular quarter, or at least we're in this current quarter, from a owner position. Okay. So that's my presentation from a market update. So again, from an overall strategy standpoint, I think it's going to be reliance on corporate issuance, asset backs from a sector standpoint, and then we'll be paying close attention to duration management for 2017. Motion to accept.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Kimberly Sykes.
You might have to be kind.
Yes. Thank you. Sorry about that. Sure.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So I wanted to just give you a brief update. When I last met with you, I had announced the pending acquisition of Bridgework by Virtus Investment Partners. And so there's a process to go through, one of which is getting consents from all of our separately managed accounts. Just so you're aware, the consent for Ocala is on the agenda for tomorrow for signature, and that's progressing well. And then the other aspect is that our holding company, Bridgework, we have mutual funds, and so the delay with all of that is going through the proxy process as it relates to our mutual funds. So we're progressing along and hopeful that we'll have a close by mid-2017, looking at early June, and certainly we'll keep you apprised you know, as to that official date.
Okay.
Let's see. Oh, this, there we go. Okay, so for this quarter, unlike last quarter where we had the major upturn in interest rates, as you know, this portfolio is a bit longer. Our benchmark is the 1 to 10 year domestic master, B of A Merrill Lynch. And so with that said, you know, we saw that rates across the curve didn't do a whole lot. The long end of the curve, the 10-year was down about 6 basis points. The 2-year was up 7. So our portfolio was a little bit longer in duration, so that was helpful. You can see the returns were positive, 0.56 versus the benchmark at 0.70. But we were a little bit behind, and that was greatly due to our underweight in corporates. And we'll go through that in just a moment. For the year, you can see the return was 0.44 versus 4.2, ahead by 2. And then our 5-year, we were ahead by 20. The return was 2.09 versus 1.89. Just to look a little more further about the characteristics of the portfolio, what was driving returns. The market value was at 55.7 million, and we were actually up about 300,000. Duration was 4.4 versus the benchmark at about 4.2, and so that was helpful. We were a little bit under as it relates to yield to maturity, about the same as last quarter, and a lot of that's driven to a bit of our conservative tilt in that we are underweight. You look at our sector distributions, we break it down by percentage of market value and as a percent of duration to contribution. This is helpful to see as it relates to longer portfolios. So with that said, we increased our treasury weighting. We were at about 40. And now we're at about 45.2. As you look at our treasuries, we're at 38, where last quarter we were at about 40. So we've increased our treasury exposure, but certainly from a duration contribution, we're a little bit longer as it relates to there. We added some TIPS, about 4.8%. They were 10-year TIPS, and certainly that contributed to our duration at 9.5%. That was one area where it was helpful to start the quarter, and in March inflation declined a bit, and certainly didn't help as much throughout the quarter. And we've since eliminated our TIPS exposure. We have been void government agencies and have been. We have just a minimal exposure at 0.8%. You look at our corporates, we are underweight, and that is a little bit due to spreads, and with that, we have actually increased our financials by 3% and reduced our industrials by 3%. And that 15% is, you know, we're obviously underweight versus the benchmark, and that contributed to underperformance. A lot of the return, particularly in the long end of the curve, came from, you know, lower quality securities in the low triple B area. We certainly benefited from our exposure in energy and metals and mining. And then from the securitized standpoint, you can see that we are overweight on the securitized side, but we have reduced our exposure. We were at about 38%, we're down to 32%, and that reduction has come from the mortgage-backed side. So I guess to summarize, certainly our Security selection within our corporate space has been beneficial because we did have exposure to energy, metals, and mining. Finance names certainly were helpful, and we increased our weighting there. Certainly had a little bit of negativity with our longer, with our TIPS exposure. So if you look at the next page, we have a compliance monitor, and certainly within the various limitations and asset allocations, we are within policy. One thing to note as it relates to corporate outlook and strategy, we look at fundamentals, technicals, and valuations, and from a fundamental standpoint, we're mildly negative. We continue to see that, you know, we're in the deterioration phase of the credit cycle. Markets, we're still trying to determine the winners and losers because certainly there's a little clarity at this point as far as the administration and policies and so forth. From a technical standpoint, that's mildly positive in the fact that, you know, higher beta credits have outperformed. Corporate issuance certainly has been at higher levels, but there's been great demand even outside of the U.S. And from a valuation standpoint, we would consider that a bit negative because the spreads have been tight. So we are slight underweight in corporate bonds, overweight in midstream, which is energy sector, metals and mining, and banking. A few things that we're kind of looking at and focusing in on that have kind of driven this, I guess, exposure the way that we are as far as underweight and corporates. First off, you know, there's been this disparity between soft data and hard data. So soft data is certainly, as we've seen here, consumer confidence, sentiment, various surveys, the ISM manufacturing numbers, they were above 50. That was 57. So certainly anything over 50 is considered expansionary. ISM non-manufacturing was 56. Consumer confidence is at 15-year highs. But the hard data, as we have gone over as far as GDP, those indicators tell a little bit of a different story. Fourth quarter, you know, was coming in at 2.1, down from third quarter of 2016 at 3.5. The year 2016 was at 2%, and that's the typical number that we've seen since 2008. First estimate of first quarter GDP was 0.7, and certainly below the expectation that was 1%. And you know, some attribute that as seasonal, but GDP numbers are adjusted for seasonality. So this disparity between hard data and soft data has certainly aligned with post-election, where we saw there's going to be a lag. There was so much consumer confidence in the Fed, in Trump, and what would come about from that. But we feel like there's going to be a bit of a lag, such that we may not see that impact until 2018, possibly 2019. With that, we feel like Trump obviously is pro-growth, pro-business. However, the immediate impact as it relates to our economy will not be felt as quickly as some of the confidence numbers are being reflected. What we will see as far as possibly immediate impact are going to be coming from some of the executive orders that have gone through that are more, you know, regulatory relief. The other thing as it relates to Fed hikes, we would characterize the comments that came out as a bit more dovish. The Fed said that the Fed funds rate is likely to remain
for some time, the low levels that are expected to prevail in the longer run. And so you've got the Fed dot plots such that many are expecting two more rate increases. But we feel future Fed moves are going to be dictated more by financial conditions. And from that Fed perspective, that's going to be coming from the stock market. So certainly they've had a tendency to overshoot as far as their estimates of where they think the Fed rate increases are going to be. And so right now the market's essentially pricing in certainly less than two, perhaps we're certainly seeing one for June at about 75-80% when I looked at it this morning. So, and then the last thing that we're watching is as far as vacancies in the Fed. I mean, that may be something on the Trump agenda because there's three open positions, and we'll certainly be looking to see how he will fulfill those. And then obviously, as I talked about last quarter, the Fed chair and the Fed vice chair, those positions themselves are up in the first quarter of, early 2018. And so it'll be interesting to see as to whether those will be reappointments or new appointments. And certainly with these appointments that Trump will make, that will certainly alter the tone. It could affect as far as monetary policy for years to come. So the thing that I would say that we're watching is if you look at the investment environment, we're experiencing some elevated uncertainty. And that combined with what we're seeing is unusually low volatility in the market. And so some will say, well, we have a fixed income bubble. We would say we have more of a complacency bubble. So something that we're watching about. Okay.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Thanks, Kimberly. Motion to approve the staff Sykes presentation.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Trust.
Absolutely, there you go.
Okay, let's take a look at the big picture, if you will. This is both the managed accounts and the internal account pie chart demonstrating that. On the managed accounts, we have a balance of $182 million, which represents about 80% of the total. The internal accounts are $47 million, representing approximately 20% of the total. Also notice, of course, PFM, Sawgrass, and Sykes have slightly different allocations, with Sawgrass being the, let's call it the center, and they're also the center in terms of the maturities and durations of the portfolio. So, moving on to the primary page returns, we started the period with $181 million. We had approximately 38,000 in net flows. That's net flows. We had investment gains of 886,000. Round it to 887, giving us a final ending value of $182,583,870. Again, on to the right of the upper quarter, we continue with the general allocation to the intermediate term at 40%, the very short at 30, and the longer 1 to 10 at 30 as well. Trailing returns at March 31. For the total account, 1 year was 77 basis points. The policy would have given us 43, so we have a differential there of 34 basis points, which is on a percentage basis quite positive. For the fiscal year, for the quarter, our return was 0.49. Again, that's net of all fees, so that against a policy of 51, so we're just slightly negative to our policy in terms of return for the quarter. For the year-to-date, our account is negative 0.48, which is 15 basis points better than the policy. Move on to the next page. I know these numbers are a little bit small, but it tells the story. The blue triangle is the portfolio. It resides in, generally speaking, the upper left-hand corner of the matrix during the one-year, three-year, five-year, and since inception periods, which is generally what you're looking for. So that represents good long-term stewardship of the portfolio. This is our kind of a, we call gray is good. You've seen it before. Wherever you see a gray shading, it's an indicative that the portfolio and or the manager is fulfilling the requirements of the investment policy and the 3 and 5 year return elements. The portfolio itself has done quite well for the 1 year, 3 year, 5 year periods, as well as since inception. Year-to-date numbers a little weak at 86%, but that's as it is. The managers have all done fine. Sykes is has, I took a look at Sykes' returns relative to the investment policy, and while there has been some weakness recently, they're still conforming to the policy, so we don't have an issue there. I don't plan to go through the individual managers, as we've all spent a good deal of time doing that. Our compliance monitor for the total fund is positive. There are no problems. I'll send a copy of that to you after the meeting. And one of the things, I thought that I had sent the fee analysis for the managers. Did you get that?
No, not yeah. Like that.
Okay. That may have been an oversight on my part, but someone asked, I don't remember who it was, but somebody wanted to know what the fees were. Two or three meetings ago, so we've been tracking that, and I have that. So if it, I'll send it to you afterwards. But we do have that information, and those fees were inconsistent with that negotiation. So that's as much as I need to or have to say at this point. Any questions? Okay, very good.
Motion to accept the cash report.
So moved.
All in favor?
Aye.
This is our internal investment report that Maribel puts together using the data. You have something?
No, I didn't know if you needed.
Oh, no, it's just one sheet, I believe. Consistent with previous reports. Maribel, do you have anything specific on this?
No, I do not have anything specific, but just to show up that there's some trust back. That's where we have the majority of our funds, and this is more like a summary to the report that we received for capital. It just put it in place of our number, and this is what we come out of.
Yeah, so it's based on the data provided from the firms.
Okay.
It's a different visual. Okay. Any other matters we need to bring up today?
Nothing
else.
I think so.
Good.
Where's your?
Thank you. I don't think I get that second.